Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report and another daily editorial here on this long weekend down in the U.S. Memorial Day. We are chatting with Robert Sinn, also known as Goldfinger, on CEO.ca. Robert's joined me a few times on the show and is becoming more of a regular guest, sharing his technical outlook and some other nuanced comments on especially the metal sector. Robert, let's start off with gold. This is the last day of the month. The markets are closed in the U.S., and gold is just above that $1,900 level. Yeah, it's not blown through that $1,900 level, but closing this month above $1,900 is quite important for gold and for this recovery now after that eight-month correction. That this recovery is now 2 months long, and it's moved actually quite aggressively, especially in May. Robert, what's your takeaway from this last month that we just saw of May and the fact that gold did manage to close above $1,900?
Hi, Corey. Yeah, what a great, you know, month of May for gold. Huge gain for the month, a very large candlestick on the, you know, monthly chart. It looks like it's breaking that downtrend from the all-time high that was made last year. And just, you know, generally speaking, I think gold sentiment is still pretty, you know, neutral. I would say it's borderline cautious. I don't think there's a lot of big hedge funds that, you know, that are long gold in any size here. And there was a really good blog post I read over the, you know, weekend talking about the COTS, so the, you know, futures data, and just speculators are nowhere near an extreme net length here, and they've been increasing their longs in recent weeks. And that's the sort of thing that we see during a bull market trend in gold. And it doesn't seem like anything is indicative of a major top here, you know, that's coming soon. In fact, sort of my thoughts on gold right now are, man, it looks so good on multiple time frames. That's the only thing that actually worries me, is that it does look so good.
Fair enough, right? It has been a strong recovery, and you look at the majors, the royalty companies, they've also all performed very well. And I keep going back to another point that Jordan Royburn brought up last week, is that on the Huey, the HUI, 100% of those stocks were over the 20 and 50-day moving averages. Robert, does this all mean that there needs to be some sort of a pause, maybe a sideways consolidation, or even a little bit of a correction here to digest some of these gains?
I mean, I don't think there has to be. In fact, if you look at the Gold Miners Exchange Traded Fund, it's kind of gone sideways for a couple of weeks, sort of between that $39 and $40, you know, levels. That's actually quite healthy. You know, it's a high and tight flag sort of pattern. And no, it doesn't. We don't have to have a big drop. We can just sort of move sideways and pause like we've been doing, and then start the, you know, next leg higher. So yeah, I don't think that, you know, there's anything in either the gold miners or gold itself that is technically or structurally, you know, negative right here. And just my monitoring of sentiment tells me that this is not too frothy yet. It's not even close, you know. You know, if we look at last summer, you know, we can see what's possible in terms of these upside moves and how frothy sentiment can get, you know, before we have to have a big drop and a big shakeout. And I just don't feel that we're there yet.
Now, are you looking at any certain sector within the gold stocks as what could be telling you that the next leg up is happening, in terms of, do you think the gold stocks will lead the next leg up? And do you think it might be more of the juniors rather than the majors that led this last rebound?
Well, obviously the seniors were the ones that turned first, you know, from the bottom in March. You know, stocks like, you know, Newmont Mining were already way up off the lows by the time that gold actually bottomed out and made that, you know, double bottom, and we started to see the, you know, juniors turn up. So yeah, I mean, I just think from a seasonality standpoint, And just it makes sense that the smaller, you know, market cap companies are now going to sort of take the reins here. And obviously during the summer, you know, we see a lot of exploration, you know, news flow in Canada. So, yeah, I think this is a good time to sort of go smaller. And obviously in terms of like copper and even silver and some of the other, you know, metals, the seniors, you know, the big miners are full of cash, you know, and they're generating huge profits. And they need to add pounds and ounces to, fill their output, you know. So I think that we're going to see, and that's sort of one of my themes for the summer in the copper sector, is to buy the explorers. So buy the companies that are going to find that next copper mine that we need in 10 years, you know, because the structural, you know, factors in copper are so bullish, and it's almost like the copper price is going to have to go to double digits, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years. The structural factors are so strong, and the big mining companies aren't really making the, you know, sort of investments that are needed to find those 40 big mines, you know, that they're going to need. So it's a very interesting, you know, situation. And it's just, you know, one of those things where it's really hard to make a bear case for copper right here. I mean, that's, I guess, the kind of a scary thing to say. But barring, you know, a total, you know, meltdown of the, you know, global economy, kind of like we saw last March, you know, with COVID and, you know, the lockdowns, it's hard to really see what can unrail this trend in copper.
Okay, I'll get into a couple of questions on that copper chart, but one more quick touch on gold here. What levels are you watching now that gold is right around and even a little above 1900?
Well, I think that 2011 high at 1923 is really important. You know, that's been kind of a key level back and forth for the last year. And it's kind of interesting how we're kind of pausing right in front of that, you know, level right now. I think that makes a lot of sense. That's a level that has some, you know, memory, shall we say. So that would be a key upside level. Above 1923, I'd say 1960 is a big level. That was like a double top from the end of last year. Above 1960, I think the 2000 level is just a psychological number. I don't think it's a big technical, you know, level. And then the all-time high, obviously. So those would be my key upside levels. And then probably, you know, about 1850, you know, would be a level where I would think that we would see some buyers step in on a pullback. And then obviously the 18, you know, the low 1800s, you know, would be, you know, another key area. So yeah, those are my, you know, levels for gold.
All right, let's move on to copper, because the copper price, look, it's just been screaming higher. And for most of May, actually, it was going through just a very short and shallow correction. But what I'm seeing that really stands out to me on a daily chart, really dating back to the beginning, even tail end of last year, is that copper, when it has corrected, keeps on coming down, touching almost perfectly that 50-day moving average, and then rebounding. That happened just a couple days ago on May 24th, the very beginning of last week. Just how strong does this copper chart continue to look to you?
I mean, it looks great. There's no reason to really overanalyze it. Buy the pullbacks, and you're right. It does pull back to that trend, that key, you know, moving average, and then it marches higher and makes new highs. So copper looks great to me, classic uptrend, and you got to buy the dips until it shows you otherwise. It seems to me like copper probably gets above $5 here, you know, this summer. I know that's not a huge call to make because we're not that far away. But when you think about copper long term, if you pull back to like a monthly chart, well, $5 is the highest it's ever been. It's never been $5 a pound. So that is a pretty big statement. And, you know, that's not to say we couldn't get a big shakeout. You know, the copper market has a long track record of sort of sharp drops that do get bought up. And, you know, then we do see price make new highs. So I would not, you know, say that it's not possible for copper to shake back to $4 and really scare some people. But I think the long-term trend is, you know, abundantly clear. And I think you got to be a buyer of any big pullback in copper.
So, Robert, one other thing that I like addressing with you and discussing is portfolio management for resource investors or investing, especially in the resource stocks. You discuss it a fair bit, but I wanted to dive into a couple concepts here, really all around the key goal of avoiding big errors for your portfolio. What are you hearing? What are you seeing out there when it comes to either new investors or the seasoned investors in the space and some of the errors that they can make when managing their portfolio?
Well, yeah, that's a great topic. You know, sort of my theme, my fundamental theme as an investor and even as a trader is to just not step into the big screw ups, you know, the big pitfalls that can really set us back. And if we avoid the big pitfalls, I think we'll all do pretty well over the long run, you know, and we don't have to be, you know, a Soros or some amazing, you know, fund manager to do fairly well over the long run, as long as we avoid the big screw ups. And one of the things that, or there's a couple of concepts that have really come into my radar the last week or so, and that is people are too focused on their cost basis. And there's just a lot of FOMO, so this fear of not participating in the upside of a bullish stock or a bull market of some sort, you know, whether it's Dogecoin or what have you. But going back to the cost basis conversation, cost basis is an interesting topic because obviously for tax purposes, we need to be aware of our cost basis. And when we log into our trading accounts or portfolios, we're going to see our cost basis unless we change the setting so that we don't see it. And so it's always there. It's sort of always in our face. Oh, you know, that's what you paid for that stock. And so if the stock is in the red for you, there's the natural tendency to not want to sell it for a loss. And so it's almost like a blind holding at that point. I'm not going to analyze the fundamentals or the technicals or what really the opportunity is in this moment because I'm in the red and I can't sell a stock at a loss. A lot of novice investors and traders have that sort of mindset, and that's just an unhealthy mindset because if we didn't focus on our cost basis and we were willing to sell investments that weren't, you know, working out, that just weren't good anymore at a loss, then we would probably do it a lot more. And if we looked at a stock with fresh eyes and say, you know what, this company, you know, the reason why I bought this is not working out. This management team is just not operating very well. They're paying themselves way too much. They're spending way too much on marketing. The project is not as good as I thought it was at the time I bought it, and I should just sell it. But a lot of people will say, no, I can't because I'm down 50%. But in reality, that down 50% could be down 90%, right? Especially in the mining sector. And then on the flip side of that, what if I have a big gain? Like, let's say I bought a stock at 10 cents and now it's a dollar. So a lot of people would say you should just sell it because you got a big win. But in reality, what if this is going to be that 100 bagger, that once in a lifetime sort of opportunity? Like, what if the huge intersection that they just drilled that got the stock to move from 10 cents to a dollar. Well, what if that's just the start of something way bigger, right? And so it's important for us to be objective and to do our best to analyze opportunities with fresh eyes. So just sort of like forget the past. Let's not worry about our cost basis. Let's just analyze this based upon the opportunity now. And if I didn't own it and I didn't know what my cost basis was, would I buy it or sell it now? And so I think that's a very important question. And then the FOMO conversation, which is something that has become really big in 2021 because of GameStop or Dogecoin or what have you. There's so many stocks or markets that have had really big moves in 2021. And a lot of people saying, well, I don't want to miss out on that, you know. And it's a strong, you know, like emotional pull to see other people profiting and talking about something, or overjoyed that the something that they own, the Dogecoin that they own, has gone up 3x in the last day, or you know, what have you. But in reality, when I choose to press the buy button because of that, you know, like emotional pull of greed and not wanting to be, you know, left out of the party, then suddenly I'm not using any actual process to choose my investments. I'm simply using my emotions, or I'm allowing my emotions to run me. And that's not healthy. That's not a good long-term investment strategy, to say the least. And it's also not focused on risk at all. You're just giving into greed. I need to be involved. I need to participate, with no mindfulness as to what the downside could be, right? And so the FOMO can cause us to make really bad choices in markets. And there was a, you know, Rick Rule conversation that came out last week where he said that FOMO is the height of stupidity. And that's a bold statement, but I don't think he's wrong. I think it's something that could always exist. There's always going to be stocks that are going up that we're not long of. And so what? I mean, especially as a long-term investor, we should grade ourselves over the long run. That means years, and in some cases, decades, right? And it's more about the pitches that we choose to swing at than the ones that we choose to just let fly by. And if we focus on the ones that we swing at and how we swing and how we hit the ball, that's really the way to gauge how we're doing as long-term investors.
Nice sports analogy, Robert. And hey, I'm with you. You always need to be reanalyzing your stocks and really focusing on the ones that do provide, or at least have the goals of having those catalysts in usually the near term, because that's what investors are looking for. Wrap us up then with, in a general aspect, and I know every company is different, but what kind of work do you like seeing get done? Where do you see the best possible catalysts coming from out of companies, especially the smaller ones?
Well, you know, in the junior mining sector, value is generated through the, you know, drill bit. So companies that are drilling right now or about to be are ones that I'm excited about. And there's no shortage of those. If you follow me on, you know, Twitter, you'll know what I'm focused on and the companies I'm following, you know, very closely, and I'm a shareholder of. I think there's a lot of really interesting and exciting stories out there right now in the you know, junior mining sector. There's no shortage, quite frankly. In fact, the challenge is to narrow them down to a dozen or so that you can fit, you know, intelligently into a portfolio. I think that there's a lot of really good opportunities, both from a trading and investing standpoint right now. And as I said earlier in the conversation, I think copper explorers. So copper is a theme that's not going away. And we need new mines, you know, and not mines 2 years from now, but 10 years from now. And so the companies that are doing the hard work and the real, you know, exploration right now are going to be the ones that will have those projects that turn into mines 10 years from now. And there could be a lot of value that gets, you know, generated in that time period.
Absolutely. Look, there's a lot of good work going on in the sector. There was a lot of money that's been raised by these companies, and a lot of them are putting it into the ground, and that is what drives these stocks. So let's hope that there's some good drilling success, because anytime people are making money in the sector, it brings more people into this sector. Hey, Robert, great chatting with you, buddy. Appreciate all of your insights. I appreciate you taking some time on this long weekend. I hope you have a great rest of your week, and we'll chat again in another couple weeks.
Thank you, Corey.